The woman had drunk herself into a stupor, and no one would bat an eye if she turned up dead at sunrise. Since running away from his orphanage 2 weeks earlier, Mark had trained himself to block out the horrible things he saw all around. From mumbling old deers suffering heatstroke to escaped pigs lapping the blood around the corpses at the roadside. The port was under blackout, so Henderson didn't see Mark's sad eyes, but he sensed a shudder in the boy's breathing and pressed a hand against his back. "What can we do, mate?" Henderson asked soothingly. "There's millions of them. You have to look after number one." Mark found comfort in Henderson's hand, which made him think of the parents he had never known. "If I get to England, what happens?" Mark asked nervously. He wanted to add, "Can I live with you?" but choked on the words. They turned away from the dockside onto a street lined with warehouses. Clumps of refugees from the north sat under corrugated canopies designed to keep goods dry as they were loaded onto trucks. Despite the late hour, a half-dozen boys played a rowdy game of football using cabbages stolen from the wharves. Henderson ignored Mark's tricky question, instead answering the one he'd asked 2 minutes earlier. "The consulate will be closed, but we have nowhere to stay, and the office is sure to be inundated by morning. We might be able to find our own way in." Henderson tailed off as a pair of German planes swept overhead. The lads playing cabbage football made machine gun noises and hurled curses over the sea until their parents yelled at them to cut out the racket before it woke younger siblings. "I'm French," Mark noted seriously. "I don't speak a word of English, so how can you get me a British passport?" "We'll manage," Henderson said confidently as he stopped walking for a moment and switched his heavy case from one arm to the other. "After all we've been through, you should trust me by now." The consulate was only a kilometre from the dockside, but Henderson insisted he knew better than the directions jotted down by an official at the passenger terminal. They traipsed muggy streets where the smell of sewage mixed with sea air until a friendly but sozzled dock worker set them back on the right path. "Wonder where Paul and Rosie are," Mark said as they broke into a cobbled square with the crumbling fountain at its centre. "They'll be upriver close to open sea by now," Henderson reckoned after a glance at his watch. "There's U-boats prowling and the captain will want to reach the English Channel before daylight." A courthouse spanned one side of the square, with a domed church opposite and a couple of gendarmes standing watch, their main purpose apparently to stop refugees settling on the church steps. The British consulate stood in a neat terrace of offices, jewellers, pawnbrokers and banks. One end of this row had suffered structural damage from a bomb meant for the docks. Even in moonlight you could see the dramatically warped facade above a jeweller's shop and broken roof slate swept to a tidy pile at the side. With low-flying bombers and the German forces expected to reach Bordeaux within the week, the Union Jack flag had tactfully been removed from the consulate, but nothing could be done about the British lions woven into wrought iron gates padlocked across the front door. Several of His Majesty's subjects gathered on the front steps, with noticeably better clothing and luggage than the refugees scavenging food along the dockside, but Henderson was wary. The Gestapo was still after him, and they could easily have spies watching what remained of Bordeaux's British community. Henderson would stand out amongst the other Brits in his peasant clothing, and Mark spoke no English, so rather than join the queue and wait for 9 a.m, he led Mark around the rear of the terrace and was pleased to find that it backed onto a sheltered alleyway. The bombing had fractured a water pipe beneath the cobbles and their boots swilled through several centimetres of water. "Have you still got my torch?" Henderson whispered when they reached the rear door of the consulate. The batteries were weak and the beam faltered as Mark scanned the brickwork. After snatching his torch, Henderson squatted down and aimed light through the letterbox. "Nobody home," he said as the metal flap snapped shut. "No sign of alarm, no bars at the windows. If I give you a boost, do you reckon you can get yourself through the small window?" Mark craned his head up as Henderson aimed the torch so he could see. "What about two cops in the square?" Mark asked. "They'll hear us if the glass goes." Henderson shook his head. "It's a sash window. You should be able to force it open with a lever." Henderson stepped back out of the puddle and found dry cobbles on which to lay and open his case. Mark noticed shadowy figures passing the end of the alleyway, then jolted at the distinctive click of Henderson loading his pistol. Mark was delighted that a British agent was going to all this bother on his account. Henderson could have abandoned him at the passenger terminal and sailed aboard the Cardiff Bay with Paul and Rosie, but as well as a soft heart, Henderson had a ruthless streak and the gun made Mark uneasy. In the 3 days since Mark first met Henderson in Paris, Henderson had shot or blown up half a dozen Germans and machine-gunned a grovelling Frenchman in his bathtub. If the next figure at the end of the alleyway chose to come and investigate, Mark knew Henderson would kill them without a thought. Henderson passed over a crowbar before screwing a silencer to the front of his pistol. Mark ran his hand along the oiled bar and glimpsed inside the suitcase. Ammunition, a compact machine gun, a zipped pouch in which Mark knew lay gold ingots, and a stack of French currency. The clothes and toilet bag seemed like an afterthought, squeezed into the bottom right corner. Mark found it miraculous that Henderson could lift all this, let alone carry it several kilometres through the port. After fastening leather buckles and tipping the jangling case back on its side, Henderson faced the building and lowered his knee into the puddle. Mark leaned against the wall and stepped up so that his wet boots balanced on Henderson's shoulders. "Now I'm really glad you didn't tread in that pile of turf."